This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Tristan Hopper.
Hello.
Edmonton guy for the National Post.
Yeah, Edmonton-based correspondent, I suppose.
And here we are in Edmonton.
That's right.
We're going to be talking about the United Nations taking a position on Ezra Levant.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about Guy Lawrence, the CEO of Rogers, getting the axe.
Right. Or Guy Lawrence.
Good to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Aaron Warner, W.D. Clark, Corinne Whiteaway, Kelly Lefebvre, Doug Giroux, James McKinney, Jacob L., and Sam Mills. Sam, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because as a librarian, as well as a podcaster myself, I appreciate the efforts of independent media to keep citizens informed. I learn more about my country and my neighbors every time I listen to Canada Land.
This episode is also brought to you by Now, as I speak, 2,577 people who are supporting us through Patreon. Guys, this is the month of our annual crowdfunder. We do this once a year. We would rather spend our time just making these shows and reporting the news. We don't want to bug you all the time. That's why usually at the end of the show, all you'll hear me say is, if you like this show, please support it. So we put it all in 1 month. This is when we need to ask you if Shortcuts is how you stay in touch with Canada, Canadian news, if our other shows are a part of your life. I want you to think about joining that very small group of people. Still, as I speak, just 2,577 of them who are making everything we do possible. And our big goal this year is to do better with how we pay our small staff. We do a lot of stuff given how few people work here, and we want to be fair to those people, and we want to keep them because we have incredibly talented people here. So anything you can do to help us keep this very strange company going and building would be helpful. If it's $1 a month, if it is $4 a month, we have rewards at every level, and we have a new book coming out and other little perks, t-shirts and posters and a cassette tape for the imposter, things like that. That is not why you're going to help us. You're going to help us because, you know, you should if you listen to this. It's a good idea to pay for your news so that we still have news and media in this country. Please, right now, go to patreon.com/CanadaLand. Have a look at our book cover. Have a look at everything else we're trying to do this year. And if you like what we do, today is the day. Please support us. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses. But we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer.
The United Nations has refused to accredit three of our journalists, blacklisting us from covering the upcoming global warming conference in Marrakesh, Morocco.
So Tristan, do you want to take a stab at summarizing exactly what happened to Ezra Levant's team when they applied to cover the United Nations climate conference in Marrakesh?
I think I might be incorrect, but they were applying for press credentials to just be reporters at it. And then the UN comes back and says, oh, sorry, we don't allow activist journalists to cover the UN, which is strange. So this is obviously a wonderful thing to happen to Ezra Levant. That's exactly what he's hoping for, that the United Nations, of all people, the organization everyone loves to hate, would keep him out because he's too dangerous and too evil of a man to be close to their climate conference. So yeah, this couldn't have worked out any better for him.
I think you got it pretty much. What they actually said was advocacy journalists, not activist journalists.
Oh, yes, advocacy.
And Ezra Levant is making hay out of this, as he does. He's got a petition. He has rallied all of the various press advocacy groups in Canada, PEN Canada, CJFE, CAJ, to his defense. And it's funny, actually, because, you know, the UN, in their kind of rejection of his press application for credentials, called him and his team advocacy journalists, which is funny for a couple reasons, but the one that kind of tickled me is that that sounds a little bit too much like a lefty thing for Ezra. So what he wrote was, maybe they meant opinion journalists. He was trying to correct them with how they rejected him, that he doesn't want his base to think of him as an advocacy. Advocacy, that's too granola, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Every news organization, you're like, well, I'm the only truth. You know, we're like religions here, all us media organizations. We are the one truth, and all the others are liars, and they'll go to hell. So maybe that's what he's getting at there. But I've actually changed my mind on this. When I initially heard it, I thought, oh, geez, you're going to try and hold a climate conference, and you got Ezra in your face, just like, you know, getting in the French, you know, ambassador's face and, you know, asking him questions. But there's going to be 3,000 journalists there.
Right.
And there are rules. Like, you know, Ezra can't show up. Well, it wouldn't be him. It would be one of his correspondents. But you can't show up, you know, with this giant sign that says, like, climate hoax and, like, raising banners and, you know, dressing up as, I don't know, what's the opposite of dressing up as a polar bear? Maybe just a polar bear that's perfectly fine.
Like, I think the opposite of a polar bear would be that that guy who they had... what was his name? The oil rig worker character.
Oh, yeah. So he could just be a roughneck?
He could just get like, yeah,
a rig worker guy. And a polar bear, and you're hugging. You can't do that.
Oil smear on his chin.
Yes, you still have to be. So initially I was like, if I was holding a conference, I don't know if I'd want, like, if it's going to make it more difficult to hold the conference. But that's not really the case. It's 3,000 reporters. He's just going to be at press conferences. So, yeah, it's weird they did this. I get a lot of heat, actually, for comparing Ezra to you. And what I'm getting at is there are people who have, you know, a very specific niche. 90% of the time, you're just pissing everyone off. But 10% of the time, you're extremely right. And we need you for those few times you're right.
Well, this is why people say to me, like, why do you even talk about Ezra Levant, given that he has this history of bigotry, which is true? The fact of the matter is, he has broken news. The rebel breaks news. And, you know, without necessarily getting angry about being lumped in the same category, I think maybe we do better than 10%. But, you know, the more you have different groups, they come from different points of view. I don't think that we're pushing an agenda the same way that the rebel is, you know, very specifically on one side of the political spectrum and very much on energy. They have one point of view. They're not going to publish anything that contradicts that point of view. Mm. But every now and then they reveal something. Backing up to the specific case of the UN, I'm on their side. I'm on the same side as CAJ, CJFE. I agree with you, Tristan. And I think that it's like pretty remarkable that the UN, for the specific purpose of rejecting Ezra Levant, invented this category of advocacy journalists. Nothing in their rules, regulations, literature about how they deal with accreditation defines this very, like, that's the part that's really scary for me, is we're going to exclude advocacy journalists. And Levant makes the case that they've got no problem with people from, if it's the TAI or the National Observer,
right,
or, you know, I mean, you work for Post Media. Somebody would say, well, Post Media has been cozy with oil and is a right-leaning publication. To have the UN start to define who's allowed in and who isn't is a very bad precedent.
Yeah, well, it came up in Alberta, where the rebel was trying to get press credentials for the Alberta legislature, and then they were initially blocked, and then it was this whole hubbub. And the point I was making at the time is, if you're Rachel Notley, you absolutely want as many rebel reporters as possible, because you hold a press conference, and then it's just like, Mrs. Notley, Madam Notley, when will you immediately resign for not respecting the wishes of Albertans? And she'd be like, well, I'm not going to do that. I was elected. Next question. And, you know, you just get a bunch of like ridiculous questions from the rebel, and you're like, well, press conference over, bye.
Sure, if somebody's hopping up and down ridiculously, you can just look cool and collected. And that was a very bad move to have like a security guard blocking the rebel from the legislature.
Yeah, if I was the premier, I'd get as many fringe organizations as possible, you know, because then you can just, you know, talk to nuts and you look smart.
I want to just kind of like pick at a couple of the details here. You mentioned, oh, you know, it wasn't Ezra, he's sending somebody to Marrakesh. He actually wanted to send three members of his team: Sheila Gunn-Reid, their Alberta bureau chief; Megan McSween, who used to be a producer with Global News and Sun News; and then their cameraman, Alex Jones, also formerly of Sun News. I have been wondering since the rebel started, because something, you know, in many ways, the public-facing fundraising aspect of the rebel, give us this much money and we'll buy a microphone, give us this much money and we'll get a chair,
right,
is not dissimilar from our own here. Then that kind of went away, and there's no transparency about how much money they're operating with or where it comes from. They are paying people full-time salaries. They have like a huge staff for a small organization. They're sending three journalists to Marrakesh. They went to Paris after the terrorist attacks there. I'm not going to suggest anything except that they should probably provide better transparency. I'd love to know how they're doing it and where all that cash is coming from.
Something that could be solved with just more independent media. You could just have the Rebel Watch, and then you could crowdfund that. Yeah, because, well, the great thing about all these fringe media organizations is someone like the Rebel would say, okay, we're going to take a week and just, you know, try and find dirt on David Suzuki. We're going to spend a week. Like, if I went to my editors and be like, you know, this, like, beloved Canadian figure, I'm just going to find something. I'd be like, well, no, we have more important things. You know, some stuff happened in Syria.
And arguably that's not, like, unless you actually had some information, that's not necessarily the best, you know, use of
time. No, it's not a good use of time. So, yeah, the reason you want these kind of organizations is every once in a while you'd be like, oh, you know, David Suzuki did kill a guy in 1981, and we never heard that's not true.
Hypothetical situation by Tristan Hopper.
Yeah. So in terms of transparency, I don't know if his readers don't want transparency, but anybody out there, just start therebel.watch.media. I personally own stoptristanhopper.com for when Ezra turns on me, then I can sell him the website.
Tristan, this is the time in our program where we take a moment to note things that have entered into our consciousness over the course of the past week. May I go first?
Yes.
I just want to point out a story that we just, here at Canada Land, published. This is Robert Hiltz, a reporter who works with us, writing that the Saskatchewan Party, ruling party in Saskatchewan, he has learned, received more than $100,000 in donations from media companies and associations in the last decade. And though a small fraction of that comes from just about everybody else, the brunt of that money came from Ralco Radio, who own all of the talk radio stations, and that's just two, in Saskatchewan. And they're just not answering questions about why a media company that basically owns the political discourse as it is heard via radio in Saskatchewan, would donate $100,000 to the ruling party. And that's something that everybody knows now because Robert Hiltz found it out and reported it for us.
I guess since you're recommending your own content, my duly noted would be the fine and glorious content of the National Post every day on nationalpost.com. No, my duly noted was going to be this is something I saw on Deadspin, just a short piece by Ashley Feinberg, and it was called "Please Stay the Fuck Out of This, Canada." And it's because there was that hashtag where it's like, I forget what it was called. It was like, U.S. is already great. So it was like Canadians sending social media messages to the Americans, and we'll be like, oh, you're already great. Don't worry about it, dear election. We still love you, which was super patronizing. And it's one of the things I hate most about Canada is that we assume anybody cares about us. I mean, we're 30 million people in the middle of nowhere. We're New Zealand with oil. And I love when people say, oh, Canada's place in the world. What will Canada think? I mean, you travel around, no one cares. Whether it's Justin Trudeau or Stephen Harper, when you know the Canadian Prime Minister is giving a speech at the UN, I mean, that's when you go to the can, because what are we going to do? It's not like Canada's going to invade a foreign country or do anything of note that matters to anyone ever. So we needed the fine cussing of Ashley Feinberg to let us know.
You are pro stay the fuck out of it, Canada.
Yeah, just have some consciousness about how small and...
meaningless?
Yeah, meaningless we are.
Duly noted. Okay, Tristan, I'm feeling guilty now for just talking about our own content, so I too will big up something from the Post Media Network, but here's the twist. It is actually by a former Canada Land guy, Sean Craig. He has been doing a lot of in-depth, diligent work on this awful story of the death of Ravina Aulach, reporter for the Toronto Star. What he revealed through this extensive investigation over the summer dredged up a lot of stuff around how the Toronto Star and its union might have behaved differently as this messy interpersonal situation between this reporter and her boss and his boss. And it was a love triangle that a lot of people say, well, this is not anything that any organization needs to look into. This is a personal tragedy. In fact, there are all sorts of attempts to seek help and support from these different organizations. And it was at a loggerhead because the Star and the union could not agree on how to investigate this. I think that probably Sean's reporting had something to do with keeping this alive and pushing it forward. We may never know that, but they have finally come to terms and are going to be pursuing an investigation that both parties can agree to into this claim of a toxic workplace culture at the Toronto Star, which is what the union actually said. Wanted to just keep people up to date with that.
Oh, I'm supposed to say duly noted. I can duly note something else as well. This Ken Bone thing, so this is a U.S. story, but Ken Bone, remember he was the fat guy in the red sweater in the second presidential debate. The media sort of fixed on him as sort of the only symbol of purity and just, a horrible shit show of an election. And then something happened weird last week. Many news organizations sort of jumped on this, including the New York Times, of going into Ken Bone's Reddit comments and then publishing stories like, oh, Ken Bone's an asshole too. So I looked at it and they found that Ken Bone, misfiled some insurance papers and he looked at porn, but the best kind of porn you want men to look at, which was like pregnant women and real girls, the really only thing that he was sort of guilty of was looking at the leaked photos of Jennifer Lawrence. And people were going with stories on this. It's like this civilian, here's his like dark past. It seemed really icky. I think America's just so ruined right now. They're like, I must smash this beautiful thing. I'm all for, I did a long series when we got Mike Duffy's diaries. Like, I read everything and tried to make it as embarrassing as possible. And a lot of people were like, how dare you, the media, how do you should stay out of people's private lives? So I think there is a good reason to get into people's private lives, because sometimes they've just been assaulting women for 20 years, or they have a crack problem, and, it's good to get into that. But
or it's a trial of a senator, and the documents you're pouring through are court documents.
Yeah, they're court documents, but, like, freaking Ken Bone? If you dug into it and the guy's like a freaking Klansman, sure, bring that up, but the stuff here, it seemed like, I don't know if the New York Times is just hiring just the most sheltered people possible, but, he had faults that seemed strangely human to be the headline of a story.
The Ken Bone episode seems to be like, this is where we're going to have this conversation about what is a civilian and what isn't. And the process by which we inflate memes or, Ken Bone by virtue of his kind of cartoonish appearance and that he was this decent guy asking a question during the debate, suddenly everyone's in love with Ken Bone, and that inflates him to a point where it becomes attractive to burst that balloon. And he's just some dude. You describe him as a civilian. I'm sure the people who wrote those stories would say, well, no, he isn't. He was viewed by hundreds of millions of people.
They're saying, well, he's starting deals and stuff now. He got a deal with Uber. which was good. But what I liked about it is I thought, oh, he's going to get these like top stories in the New York Times and he's just going to be crushed. You know, he's just going to be turned into jelly. That's what we do to civilians. That's what the media does. But he was just on Twitter like, hey, guys, haters going to hate. What you going to do? I'm just a normal guy here. So I liked him all the more for the fact that he took, you know, a pretty humiliating media onslaught and said like, well, what are you going to do? I'm just human. So, yeah, I think Ken Bone survives, everyone.
Tristan Hopper approves of Ken Bone's crisis management and his taste in pornography.
And you should feel bad about that. Like, you know, we get into journalism because we saw Woodward and Bernstein. We're like, oh, and you're scrolling through Reddit comments to make Ken Bone look bad? Like, you know, feel bad about that.
Duly noted. Tristan, let's talk about the former CEO of Rogers, Guy Lawrence, who reportedly has stepped down. First of all, like, it is so difficult to parse the bullshit in any kind of reporting on these corporate matters. He didn't step down.
Well, maybe he did. Sometimes CEOs just get bored and they step down. They're not forced out.
Sometimes.
You know, sometimes mere minutes before profits reports coming out showing that profits have halved, they just leave on their own volition, which might be the case. I mean, you know, having been in a media organization that's been going through rocky times, I mean, if you sign up to be the CEO of Rogers and you're like, oh, I'll just buy the NHL, woo! And then suddenly you start going through rocky times, I could see saying like, well, I didn't sign up for this. I don't want to, you know, be laying people off and cutting things and finding efficiencies. So see ya.
Totally possible that somebody says, you know what? I've really shit the bed here. I'm going to step down. It becomes very clear when reading Derek DeCloet in the Globe and Mail, who used to work at Rogers, with a pretty extensive inside take on the reign of Guy Lawrence at Rogers, that he got a hand on his shoulder and said, this is not working out. It is time to step down. And DeCloet writes that Guy Lawrence learned the hard way the two rules of running Rogers. One, don't cross the Rogers family, and two, you must produce results. Guy Lawrence came in and he spoke the language that everybody wanted to hear in a huge media and telecom company like Rogers. He talked about Rogers' terrible customer service, and that resonates with so many people. Everybody knows that. Everybody within Rogers knows that they're awful to deal with. He's going to fix that, cut down the bureaucracy, improve customer retention.
Yeah, it did increase wireless customers.
Yes.
But then Show Me went down in flames.
And then Show Me went down in flames, which I think that the bigger takeaway from his time there is that every single failure and move that you read about indicated that content is something that Rogers is not making as much money out of, and that they are moving away from, with the exception, you know, as they slash Rogers Publishing, Show Me going down, the one big move he made was getting into business with Vice.
First of all, I'm surprised that Rogers is being run by CEO. I thought it was just several men named Roger. But in terms of, I think he's experiencing what any media organization is experiencing. Yeah, it's harder to just sell a magazine like in the old days. So I don't know if this is new for Rogers, that suddenly they're just reaching the like, oh, here's some like stuff on a piece of paper and you know, you can buy it, and that's becoming a problem. But Rogers is an interesting case compared to, say, Post Media, is because they have, you know, they have a side of the organization that can make money and prop up the other side. Your magazines are getting the crap kicked out of them, but you just sold a bunch of new wireless subscriptions. You don't want, all we have is newspapers, and newspapers aren't doing good. We got to open something, I don't know, a drug section of Post Media, and then these wouldn't be a problem.
Hold on. Like you say, like, well, on the one hand, the magazines aren't doing great, but on the other hand, we got this successful telecom thing happening. Let's just like put in perspective the scale here. And this tells us a little bit of something about the media in Canada. Rogers is a $28 billion company, okay? You could take their publishing operations and their television and anything that they touch that has to do with content, and it is dwarfed by the amount of money they make selling us wireless services, internet access, still phone services. That is the overwhelming majority because they have an oligopoly. They are part of the big three. And that is a license to make big money. Mm. Big media in Canada is not about content. There are big media companies in the States. When we think about the Rogers and the Bells of the world, they are not in media the same way. They're just selling us access to the pipes. The media in the States make creative decisions at a high corporate level that are incredibly consequential, about hundreds of millions of dollars, that are about who's going to host a show, what are you going to green light, what kind of vertical are you going to build for which demographic. They're in news, they're in show business at a corporate level. These corporations in Canada do content as a, like, it's an aside. And the real money that they glean from content has to do with simply being
like
a dumb passage.
What do people watch?
Their...
Oh, they seem to like this Hockey Night in Canada thing. We'll hire that guy. And this guy with the earring.
Or just buying the rights to American sitcoms and drama shows.
I suppose that's correct.
I mean, it's at such a level where the biggest thing that they seem to have done, I guess besides hockey, is this Vice deal, which is a $100 million deal, though I think maybe $50 million of that is in-kind services. But there's like a lot of cash in that deal. In my world, that was a big thing where they hired a ton of people and start making all these shows with Vice. It is sort of dismissed out of hand by Derek DeCloyd as the Vice deal was a minor error. In the large scheme of things, the bigger failure of Guy Lawrence, he could have done that as a lost leader and just to seem like he's keeping things young and cool. Okay, we're in business with Vice. Who cares if it doesn't work out? It was interesting to me. Like, I don't follow the business community.
Ideally, you want with these organizations, you want someone who just likes the idea of journalism. Like Bloomberg. Bloomberg, humongous organization, and it makes all its money from the terminals. Bloomberg Business, the magazine, Michael Bloomberg bought that for it was something ridiculous. It was like $10 million.
Yeah.
Michael Bloomberg is a multi-billionaire. He's one of the richest people in the United States. I mean, he bought a magazine for less money than his house, one of his houses.
Right.
And he's just like, oh, we'll just run this magazine and make it an extremely good business magazine because I can. So I think what you're getting at is you want I'm sure your audience doesn't like Conrad Black, but you know, just a big evil billionaire who likes the idea of journalism just for fun, which was kind of like the National Post. He just said, I'm just going to throw money at it and up yours, Globe and Mail. Here's a competitor.
That's what Citizen Kane said. It would be terribly fun to run a newspaper, right? I'm sure
the exchange was exactly the same, and his longtime business partner ripped up the statement of principles and then...
Who was Joseph Cotton in that deal? The guy who later betrayed him, I suppose. It's humbling, I guess, to realize just what an afterthought everything in Canadian media is to the real engines of profit. And you know, some of this is like just interesting to read. Derek DeCloyd writing about how the real problem for Guy Lawrence was that he pissed off George Cope at Bell and called them crybaby Bell for their whining about CRTC decision, and then found himself in a terrible situation when BCE Bell signed a deal, $594 million to this retail chain that deals with wireless Wave that Rogers needs a piece of. And then after spending $594 million on this, Bell sold half of it back to Rogers for $473 million. So you're talking about a huge error compared to the Vice error. Talking about what this means for the future of the media in Canada, I really feel like we want to have people running our news and content services who actually live and die by the quality of the news and content and shows.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, because Guy Lawrence did bring up wireless subscribers and he can increase profitability there. I think you need a balance. I think ideally you want a model where you have someone at the head who knows how to run the financials and stuff, and then we'll have sort of the content section and provide some freedom to it, because I do think those things are largely mutually exclusive. I mean, just look at the lack of business savvy among reporters. We have no clue what's going on.
That's got to change, man. I think a reporter in 2016 cannot stand by this church and state distinction. You can't divorce yourself from how the news is going to make money if you want to have a career and you're doing this year. Like that's a luxury we can't afford anymore.
Oh yeah, I agree. But I don't know. If you can find this magic person who has both business savvy and a respect for content, I'm all for that. But
well, I'm saying that the divorce that I think a lot of people have seen as virtuous, that, you know, well, the teeny little margins.
Oh, yeah, where people are proud of, like, how much does your newspaper
make? That you're
don't fucking know.
Yeah, that's
I don't do that. No, that's weird.
Not just that, but if you have these mega corporations that don't really care if there's, like, a little minor variation in subscriber rates or whether your readers are really pissed off with your newspaper, because the newspaper only exists as sort of a, it's almost like the PR wing, you're much more connected if the people who are making business decisions for media actually think that if they have better content, they'll do better business-wise. Mm-hmm. I don't buy that that hurts the content. I think that makes the content more connected to the people it serves.
Yeah, I mean, here's the theory. The larger and more faceless your corporation, the more the media is just sort of left alone. Because again, Rogers, you would think they're not paying close attention to McLean's month-by-month subscriber levels because they got bigger fish to fry. So
I think that's true.
I mean, ideally within an organization like that is you have It's one of those things where you check in every 5 years and it's like, oh, how many people are subscribing to like Cottage Life?
And the 12? Only thing that changes is when those numbers fall off a cliff, you say, oh, this is just a money suck. Let's just go to monthly.
Yeah.
And you don't really care if they have picked things up or if the content is fantastic or, you know what, this is actually really getting to be a much better magazine than it used to be. Let's put more into this. I guess what I'm saying is that massive consolidated corporate media in Canada has failed Canadians.
No, I believe Post Media has provided nothing but truth and goodness to the people of Canada.
Tristan Hopper, it's been good having you here. That is your Canada Land Shortcuts for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me anytime at jesse@canadalandshow.com. And we are on Twitter at Canada Land. Tristan, where can people find you?
Nationalpost.com.
You on Twitter?
Oh, yes. My name, Tristan Hopper.
Our website is CanadaLandShow.com. And guys, our Patreon site where we need your support right now is patreon.com/CanadaLand. Canada Land Shortcuts this week is recorded by Katie Jensen and produced by Kevin Sexton. We make Canada Land available to community and campus radio across this country for free, and Russell Gragg handles that. If you like what we do, please support us.